Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Another great show this week for the podcast. Stephen O'Brien talks to us about Tom Brady's retirement after 22 seasons in the NFL. In rugby, Will Slattery of the Irish Independent talks to me about Ireland's chances in the Six Nations against Wales. Declan Drake gives a full rundown on all of the GAA, including two Dublin clubs that are chasing the All-Ireland Ladies Club Football Glory. And in racing, George McDonough gives us an in-depth analysis of the Dublin Racing Festival. Alan Cawley also has a nostalgic look back at the FA Cup and Man United's shock defeat to Middlesbrough. So download the show now wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? You all right? Yeah, did you get through?
No, I didn't sleep well. I didn't sleep well last night at all. Oh my goodness! I could see it coming though in the penalty shootout. Could you after yeah. You know you're missing so many chances. Oh, they should have been out of the woods like by after the first half and. You know, sport has a funny way. When you don't take your chances, Reg, it comes back to bite you. And that's exactly what happened. But that's the lowest of the low now. Going out, I know the FA Cup, it's such a great competition. You know it sort of lost its charm because of the Champions League. But I still love it. I mean, we both grew up watching the FA Cup, you know, and how big it was. And I still love it. And it's just such a shame going out. When they had it in the palm of their hands, United, you know?
8-7 on penalties. It's hard to believe. 8-7. No question about it, really.
It's just, honestly, they've stooped so low now. You know, with the performances, it's just, I don't know how bad it can get any after this. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, the worst now that can happen is they don't get into the top four for the Champions League next year. And that's a possibility, the way they're playing at the moment, you know?
It is, yeah. There's no doubt about it. Things are very, very dodgy. It's a real mess over there. I mean... what's the answer? What do they need to do? Do you think, as a fan, from a fan's perspective,
They need a clear out. There's a lot of like players that are just not up to the standard. I think to play for Manchester United, you know, and I don't know what it's going to take. It's going to take an awful lot of money. I know that. And I see Pochettino was maybe available at the end of the season. That Paris Saint Germain have said that he's going to be leaving. So. That may be a possibility for United. That could be a next manager, and that might be a positive step, but he will still need a lot of investment. Like, there's no doubt about it, you know?
Yeah, but, like, you've had managers and you've had people coming in trying to fix it. I think the clear out, as you said, is the absolute must. But, starting a club all over again, isn't it?
Like, really yeah, it is, yeah. Club. Yeah, I mean, they haven't won anything now for, it's nearly 10 years, is it, since they've last won somewhere? I can't remember the last time they won anything.
It's been about 5 years for a domestic trophy of any description, so...
Yeah.
Maybe they won some sort of Mickey Mouse.
And that might have been a Carabao Cup or something like that. But yeah, I mean, they've lost the last, like, seven out of eight penalty shootouts. I mean, the last one was the Europa League where David De Gea missed that penalty when it went right through the team, like 11-10. But they need a huge clear out in the summer for sure. They need about four or five players, I think, to make them anyway sort of competitive with the likes of Liverpool and Manchester City and even Chelsea, you know.
Okay, well, let's leave that behind.
But I still love the FA Cup, I must say. It is a fantastic competition. And, you know, I have to say, fair play to Middlesbrough. I thought they did... what they came to do, and they played really, really well. You know, it was good to see Aaron Connolly get on the pitch as well, you know, our own Irish man, and he did really well when he came on, and I thought, the team did really, really well, Middlesbrough. I thought they played great, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, in your own world, snooker, what's happening?
Players Championship this week. It'll be on ITV, top 16 players ranked in the world, so... that's going to be starting on ITV from Monday. Runs right through to... So it's a big tournament. It started off with 32, down to 16, and then it goes down to 8 for the final event in March. So there's big money at stake for a lot of the players. this week, but it'll be all on ITV, and I'll be in the commentary box with the Stephen Hendry and Alan McManus and Neil Fowles and that. So I look forward to it. They're good lads, and looking forward to for the week, you know. But I'm looking forward to the rugby this week. I mean, yeah. You must be excited about it as well, you know. Wales come in and the crowds are back, and the atmosphere will be electric.
There's a great buzz around the city already. I mean, since yesterday, the Welsh have been coming in.
Yeah.
You know, with all the travel restrictions and all of the venue restrictions lifted and the bars open, and, you know, it just feels like normal life again. And there's a huge buzz around the place. Everything is hopping. So I expect it to be pretty amazing later on. We'll be going in around Ball's Bridge for a little look around, and it should be fantastic. Yeah. Really looking forward to it. Yeah. It's going to be a good match as well. We picked a really good team. I think, Farrell has definitely picked on form. There's a new guy called Mac Hansen on the wing as well, who's very exciting looking prospect. So there's lots of, there's lots to look forward to in the rugby. There's no question about it. It's a really, really strong pack of forwards. But the Welsh, they're just a team that we've always had trouble with over the years, you know?
They're
a bit of a bogey team for us. You know, I've lost to them and I've beaten them, and you kind of, with, like, when you lose to them, it's usually when you're expected to win, and when you beat them, it's usually when you're expected to lose. It's such a weird game always. And today we're definitely expected to win, there's no question about it, but, you know, it's the Welsh. It's such a dodgy game.
It's the Welsh, very, and they're always been tough, but I think they've been depleted with a few injuries, haven't they? They don't have as strong as a squad as they probably finished last year with. But but that could, you know, that when new faces come in, et cetera, they can grasp the opportunity as well. But it's going to be just the atmosphere, you know, in the Aviva as well, and Ireland starting off. And hopefully it'll be a good season for Ireland this year. You know, we've got a lot of, there's a lot of positives, as you said, with the team and the form as well.
Well, we're second favourites, and rightly so. France are just slightly favourites. We're second favourites with England. England, who are playing Scotland today. Funnily enough...
The Calcutta Cup, yeah.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, with the bookies, I know you like to have a little flutter now and again. They're -1 at almost even money, Ken. I'd certainly be taking England at that with the squad of with the squad of players that they have. So that might be one for you to have a little note of for later on.
Okay, that's put down.
Yeah.
I'll be listening to Mr. McDonough as well, of course. For the racing festival, of course, Dublin Racing Festival over the weekend as well.
Yeah, George is coming on a little bit later on, but he's given us some good tips recently, so that'll certainly be one to listen to later on. The golf as well, Ken, of course.
Seamus Power.
And Leona.
Genie, he's still and Leona McGuire as well. Yeah, both of them at the top of the leaderboard. Fantastic performances. Yeah, I was just checking the score. He's 5 shots ahead, Seamus Power, at Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
And Leona McGuire is third for the lead in Florida, isn't it, where she's playing. So, that's fantastic, isn't it, to see an Irish man and Irish woman at the top of the leaderboard on the PGA Tour. It's absolutely brilliant. You know, he's trying to hold himself together now and not get too excited, particularly for Seamus McGuire. Being so, you know, 5 shots in front of the rest of the field is absolutely brilliant. You know,
Seamus McGuire, is that a hybrid of
Leona? Sorry, Seamus Power. Yeah.
It's a new one. That would be a fairly tough combination to beat, to be fair. Wake up, William, for God's sake.
Seamus Power. Sorry. This early start, Roger. I still haven't got my head around it yet.
I can see that. A couple of times we haven't drag out a bit, forget to call in. So I know it's a bit early on a Saturday for you. I understand. Early. No, it is. It's great though. Seamus Power is absolutely flying over there, and Leona, because you know, we're going to be talking to Deirdre Smith about this fairly soon, and Leona wanted to get off. She took a bit of a break, and you know, maybe at the after the Solheim and everything else, there was a little bit of you know you can understand a little bit of lack of form because she was maybe just trying to regroup, but what a way to regroup and coming back in the Drive On Championship in the LPGA. So best of luck to her. I hope that goes really well.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. I wish her well. Wouldn't it be great to have the Irish flag at the top of the leaderboard in both competitions come Sunday. Absolutely, very very exciting for golfers this weekend for sure. You know.
Okay. Well, look, you have a busy weekend with the Players Championship, so good luck with that, and I hope it all goes well with you. And enjoy all the rugby this weekend. It's going to be plenty.
I will do. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Really looking forward. I'm sure you will be very excited. Will you be working at it?
Later on today, I'll be around Lansdowne, and then we're going to have to try and find somewhere then to watch the English match, because I think that's going to be an absolute cracker of a game. Calcutta Cup, it's always a huge event, and the Scots, although they're not as good a team as England on paper and maybe in performance, they have improved dramatically of late, so it's going to be a cracker of a match. I still think England will edge it, even though they have a new out half there and they've got some injuries with Andy Farrell's young lad Owen. They're going to be a little bit on edge, the English, but I think they just have enough strength to come through, so I think they'll just edge that one. But it still should be a good match and a cracker.
I'm
looking forward to people being back in the city centre.
Yeah,
the Welsh, you know, we love and hate them in equal portions. You know, so it'll be great to have.
It's always a great sing song with the Welsh. Anyway, that's for sure.
All right. Look, I'll let you go, we'll catch up again next week. You take care and have a good week.
Have a good weekend.
Time to turn our attention to what is a very, very busy rugby weekend with the start of the Six Nations, and delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Will Slattery. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very excited. No doubt you are yourself. It's a cracking looking weekend, no doubt about it. Two very, very juicy ones to start things off today. Ireland taking on the champions in the Aviva. There's a great buzz around the city. Welsh are in town. Everywhere is open again. And it just feels like normality again. No doubt you'll be looking forward to it yourself.
Oh yeah, big time. I think, as everyone's been saying, happy Sixmas. You know, the herald the start of the Six Nations, and as you mentioned, already a lot of supporters coming in last night from Wales. I've seen some videos of them singing Bread of Heaven in a few pubs around town. So even though we've gotten Six Nations the last couple of years during COVID, this is a whole different beast. Like, we saw in November the impact a full crowd made in that Ireland-New Zealand game. I expect to be very similar over the course of this tournament. Having those home fans back roaring on teams will have a huge impact. It's set up really nicely this weekend. It's a really exciting way to start it off.
Yeah, well, talking about the Welsh, I remember last year we were talking about this, and Wayne Pivac, the coach, was under a lot of pressure even going into it, and the Welsh were being written off in all quarters, and they ended up being champions. So that's the typical Welsh reaction to everything. Now, this year, again, we go into it, they're talking about them having a lightweight pack, now, a lot of players out injured. You know, if I give you a little list, this might give you an idea. Alan Wynne-Jones, Ken Owens, Talupe Faletau, Lee Happeny, Dan Lydiate, Josh Navidi, George North, Justin Tirp, all not on a Welsh team sheet. So, you know, that'll give you an idea of what they've lost and what they're trying to replace it with. But what's your view on it? I mean, Ireland have a very, very strong team going into this game. They're 14-point favourites. Are we right to write off the Welsh, or is it a very dodgy move?
Well, I think we're both right, and it's a dodgy move, as you outlined there. Like, last year, I thought they were going to maybe beat Italy and lose all their other games. They got the rub of the green with the red cards. And like, we've seen Wales before, they can grow into a Six Nations tournament. In both 2019 and 2021, their third round game against England, when they got the win there, kind of turbocharged them to the finish line, and they ended up winning the Six Nations. But this time around, as you say, the amount of injuries they have there, looking through their team sheet in particular, how their pack matches up with Ireland, and I just really think Ireland have a very big advantage there. That front row that kind of was unleashed upon world rugby in November was an absolute game changer. Finally getting Porter and Furlong on the pitch at the same time, with Ronan Kelleher in between and playing great rugby as well. The options they have with Dan Sheehan on the bench as well. And in that back row, Doris van der Fleer and Conan, they haven't actually got to play together that much. That's what's so exciting. I think the more they play over the course of the tournament, the better they're going to get. For me, it's the best back row in the tournament and the best front row in the tournament. You know, that might be a little, you know, over the top. They've only played a small amount of games together thus far, but I really think the potential is there for them to be huge weapons for Ireland. And I just don't think Wales have the depth to overcome that amount of absentees. I know we've been stung by them before, but their record in Dublin isn't great. They haven't won here, I think, since 2012. So I'd be pretty confident in Ireland getting a good start today and really putting their best foot forward in this tournament.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one as well, I think, seeing Byrne in that second row position. I think it's almost, how do I put this, a necessity. They kind of had to find a place for Byrne because he's so good and he's playing such amazing rugby. But there simply wasn't a place for him in that back row because it's so on fire at the moment, which is a great position to be in. And maybe someone like Ryan Baird, who's playing amazing rugby as well and is no doubt going to be a superstar of the future, may have lost out as a result of that because he could have found himself in the second row with Ryan. So it's a brilliant problem that Andy Farrell has in the sense that he's got a pack of forwards and so many eligible substitutes as well to stick in there.
Yeah, like the Ty Byrne case is interesting. Like he was one of the breakout stars of the Six Nations last year playing at six. Mm. And then he got in the Lions tour off the back of that. But he didn't really get his rewards for his great form. He was barely used by Warren Gatland. He didn't get to start against New Zealand. And when he came off the bench, he played really well. He's been playing with like a kind of a chip on his shoulder. He seems like he's a guy who's pissed off that he's not getting the kind of the starting spots at the national level that he thinks he deserves. Because whenever I see him play for Munster, he's just a man possessed of the breakdown. He's such a weapon for Ireland. For me, what's really interesting, as you say, he was kind of always going to start today given Henderson's fitness problems. But if Henderson is back fit for, say, the trip to France, you're paying a bigger pack. Like, usually what has happened is Ty Byrne has lost out. There seems to be an idea that he can't match up maybe physically with some of the bigger packs. I know when he first kind of broke into the team, he had a couple of tough experiences. So that'll be a really interesting selection battle, especially if he goes well today, which I think he will because he's in such good form. Like there's a couple of interesting selection decisions for Andy Farrell maybe next weekend, depending on how the team goes today. There's a few guys who aren't involved today that might come into contention for what's a very important trip to Paris. Obviously, today is first and foremost in importance, but it'll be very interesting to see how Andy Farrell manages the next 2 weeks.
Like who, for example, Will?
Robbie Henshaw is someone who's not involved today. Like, I know he has, he's carrying a bit of an injury, but he's the guy who's probably the best 12 in the Northern Hemisphere at the moment. He barely played in November. He had a slow start back into the season after the Lions tour and a couple of niggles. So if he comes back fit, do you opt to go with Bundiaki and Gary Ringrose again? Do you bring Hench on to the bench? James Hume is there today. So there's a couple of things like that are kind of intriguing. You know, obviously the wing, Matt Hansen, does he keep his place for France? Obviously it depends on how he goes today, but you know, getting a home debut against Wales at the Aviva Stadium is very different to going to the Stade de France on a Saturday night. So there's a couple of interesting calls he'd have to make, and obviously it'll be very much predicated on how the team goes today. Yeah. That's why it's so fascinating, I think.
I think Henshaw would be walking if he gets over the injury and he's up to match fitness level. I think he'd be straight back into that team. I think you need that creativity that he brings for the French game. France is a very, very different animal to what we're playing against today. The bash-up tactics that they might use a bit more with Aki will work against the Welsh, but I'm not sure that'll go anywhere against the French. They're just too good. So I think we need the creativity of Henshaw if it does come down to it next week.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, though, because, like, you know, if Ireland go well today and they win, which I think we're hoping and in some cases expecting, you'll have had Bundy, Aki and Gary Ringrose, you know, they played against the All Blacks and won. They played in the opening Six Nations game and won. It is kind of difficult then to break it up, to bring in someone, even though he's an unbelievable player, and I agree with you, but he hasn't played a whole lot of rugby. So do you just say, OK, I'm splitting up kind of my established tender partnership over the last while? Yeah, so that's why it's so... I know we're kind of kicking it on to next week already, but it's just there's a lot of kind of subplots today, I think, in terms of how the team might look over the course of the championship.
Talking of lack of game time, then, you know, you've got Joey Carberry sitting on the bench. Again, Jack Carty being overlooked despite his recent run of form, and Carberry's lack of game time, another one that maybe raised a few eyebrows.
Yeah, like there's kind of two things in this, and I think they're both true at the same time. If I was Jack Carty, I'd be pretty fuming that I haven't got a look in, considering he's been playing really well recently. They played head-to-head earlier in the season and Carty comfortably outplayed him, and Carberry hasn't played any rugby since that Wasp game at the start of the Champions Cup. So for Carty, you have to be thinking, is my international career pretty much dead in the water, given that I'm not even getting a substitute spot when the guy I'm going against hasn't, you know, played a match in, you know, what, six weeks or so. But at the same time, as Andy Farrell kind of stressed, like, you know, Carberry, he says, is fighting fit, he's ready to go. They've invested a lot of faith in Joey Carberry. He really did close out that All Blacks game well. He was good against Argentina the following week. So from Andy Farrell's perspective, I suppose he's thinking, well, this is my number two out half. This is the guy I'm grooming. So I know he hasn't played, but why do I necessarily want to drop him for a guy who I don't really maybe see long term as having that kind of impact at the international level? Well, so I actually agree with that.
You've answered the question that you posed at the beginning of it. Is Jack Harty's international career over? Well, then it is, if that's the mindset, because what's the point? You know, he's got to wait for two other lads to get injured, which is not a nice way to live your rugby career, you know, waiting on people to get injured in the hope that you'll get a run. So yes is the answer. Maybe he should just walk away from it.
Well, he's just signed a new kind of contract. It's interesting, if he hadn't signed it yet after this experience, would he be like, okay, the door is shut on my international career? Would I be better off going to Premiership or going to France, something like that? But he does seem to really like, you know, he's from that, you know, he's from Connacht. He loves that area. You know, he loves playing for Connacht. So it's obviously a big driver for him too. But in terms of international recognition, I think that ship has sailed given this selection for this weekend.
There's nothing worse, I can tell you, from past experiences, than rocking up to camp and putting in all the training for the week and having to be, you know, interested in everything else, and then you don't get the sniff at the end of it and you're kind of back in the bus or back in the car driving home going, that was a nice waste of a week being cannon fodder for the team to batter you around the place. You know, it's not a nice place to be.
Yeah, and like, frustratingly for Jack Carty, like some of the other guys who weren't involved this weekend, Robert Ballacoon, Mike Lowry, were released back to their provinces and got in the shop window last night. Robert Ballacoon was really good, scored two tries. Michael Lowry had another really good, elusive running performance. But obviously, Jack Carty has to be there on match day in case a 10 goes down in the warm-up. So he has to just, as you say, kick his heels, you know, take part in the warm-up as if he's going to play, and then go and sit and put on a tracksuit and sit in the stands. Whereas at least the other lads who aren't involved got to keep themselves, you know, in Andy Farrell's eye line in case something does go wrong and they're called in.
Absolutely. Okay, look, just to finish it up, I think we're going to have a pretty convincing win today. I don't see Wales posing us that much of a problem. They will for maybe 50 minutes, and then our strength and depth will just come in. We've a great bench there as well to come in, so I think we'll just get that job done. The more interesting game, actually, in many ways, is the Scotland-England game in the Calcutta Cup. Now, England are -1 with the bookies in around even money. I find that a surprising margin, because I do feel, even though it's in Scotland and Scotland have found form of late and they're a good team, no question about it, I don't think they're a match for England. I feel England, even with the out half situation, are a far better team. I think they'll beat Scotland by double figures.
Yeah, well, that's a big call. Like, it's funny, like Eddie Jones already, you know, with the mind game, saying Scotland are overwhelming favourites. The pressure's all on Scotland. And I actually, even though I think he was taking the piss and doing a bit of mind games, I actually kind of agree with him. I think this is a huge match for Scotland. Like, England have had a lot of turnovers since the last Six Nations. I think only 8 of the guys who started, you know, the South Africa game, even in November, I think, are starting in this game. Like, Marcus Smith is making his Six Nations debut. You know, there's upheaval in the back row. Tom Curry's been pitched in as captain in Owen Farrell's absence. So there is a lot of change. Scotland have a very settled team. They've been talking about themselves as a contender for years. They've never actually contended for a Six Nations title. So for me, this is a huge game for them. I actually think the pressure is on them. And I agree with you. I think England will win as well. I think they have a stronger bench. I think they have a better pack. I think Marcus Smith... Now, the only thing is, the forecast is for a very dirty weather day in Edinburgh. So that... And I actually think that plays into England's favour as well. Yeah. You know, because, you know, Finn Russell on a greasy day, is he the man to navigate your way around that? Not necessarily. So I think it's a fascinating game. It's a huge game for both teams. You know, the first weekend is so vital, but... You know, Eddie Jones, after a fifth place finish, I think, or fourth place last year, is under pressure. Scotland want to mark themselves out as proper contenders. It's fascinating. I agree with you. I think England will win, but the weather makes things very unpredictable to me.
It's FA Cup time now. We're going to talk to the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well. Very well indeed. You know something? I want to start off the football section with you without having to talk about United on a weekly basis. But they're making it impossible. I mean, like, you know, losing last night again in the FA Cup. And I know the FA Cup is not what it used to be. And I know they don't seem to care about it. But that is an absolute disaster, losing to Middlesbrough.
Yeah, absolutely, Reggie. I agree totally. Especially when you think, I suppose, as you mentioned, the fact that the FA Cup is not what it used to be, and we tend to see some of the top teams making changes, or a lot of changes going into games. But Man United played their strongest 11 last night. A very strong team, he named, and to lose to Middlesbrough, as you say, in the manner that they did as well on penalties. Just when you think maybe coming off the back of the good result against West Ham, and people are suggesting slowly but surely are they turning the corner. Now, I never felt that was the case at all. But Rangnick has picked up a few results since he came in. But that was probably the most realistic chance, the only chance really that they had of winning a trophy this year was the FA Cup. And even at that, I would have had them maybe fourth or fifth favourites. But to bow out in the manner that they did, especially to Middlesbrough as well, it's a massive blow for the club. But to be fair to Middlesbrough, I think you have to give them credit as well, Reggie, and I like the manager, Chris Wilder. We would have known him, obviously, from his time at Sheffield United, and he made a huge impact when he got them promoted and came into the Premier League. So I was delighted for him as well, because I really like him. But in terms of Man United, it's a massive blow, yeah.
Yeah, it is. No, I think, you know, looking at the team, and, you know, we're not being disrespectful to Middlesbrough. We're just saying, look, you know, the reality is Manchester United should be wiping the floor in those games. And that's just the reality of the money and the whole way that the world operates and the players that they have. But, like, I think, you know, a lot of teams don't target it. But as you said with the selection, I think they might have been targeting the FA Cup simply because they're not looking at very many chances to win any bit of silverware. And they need something. They haven't won anything. I believe it's 5 years or something of any domestic title.
It's 5 years now, Reggie, yeah, as you say. And that's the only realistic hope that they had of winning a trophy this year was the FA Cup. So, of course, he targeted it. That's why he named such a strong team. But they're way off where they need to be, Reggie. Like, and we see that on a weekly basis. This, even that result last night, that's not an isolated result. Like, even though, as I say, Rangnick has come in, they've picked up a couple of results, albeit though the performances have been dreadful in a lot of games. Plus, they haven't played anyone of note since he's come in. So that would have been the first chance last night to, as I say, to get into the next round with a realistic hope of maybe going on to win a trophy. But as you say, it's 5 years now without winning. I think the Europa League in 2017 was the last thing they won. And if you look at it, really, and I remember saying this to a few lads a few weeks back, if you think of how far they are away from winning maybe a Premier League title, I think it could be something like what we saw with Liverpool there in the 90s and the 2000s, that it could be another 25 years before we see Man United winning the Premier League. I think they're that far off, Reggie. Like, it's such a mess. And that's not even going into the stuff that's going on off the field at the moment as well. So it's such a mess of a club from top to bottom at the moment.
Okay, well, best leave that alone for the time being then. But there's some really good juicy ties to look forward to in the FA Cup. I mean, you know, we always talk about that maybe that it's lost the glamour that it used to have once upon a time. But still, teams rock up. I mean, you know, for the likes of the teams playing the big names, so Plymouth taking on Chelsea, City have got Fulham, you know, who they're well able to score goals, Fulham. So there's always the odd tie. I think, is it Everton and Brentford, there's the odd ties that kind of throw up a few questions in the FA Cup.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And I know it has kind of lost a lot of its magic over the years, but I definitely think even so far this year's competition, we've had some really good games in it and a couple of surprises. You see a couple of lovely stories. Kidderminster as well is a good story at the moment. Cambridge, our own Wes Hoolan is talking out today against Luton Town as well. So that'll be it'll be lovely to see. I think it's live on BBC as well over the weekend. So it'll be lovely to see Wes rolling back the years also. It does. It'll always have its magic for me, though, Reggie. We grew up watching the FA Cup, and it was such a magical tournament and competition. I know it's obviously there's so much money involved now at Premier League level and obviously Champions League level that the top teams have bigger fish to fry. But more often than not, even in recent times, and probably because of the squads that they have, you still see them come to the latter stages still being the top boys that are going to win it, because they're able to rotate the squads and still get them through to maybe a quarter-final, semi-final, and then to take it a bit more serious. But I do think there's a lovely... there'll always be that little bit of magic about the FA Cup, and I don't think that'll ever go away. I hope it never goes away, to be honest with you. And I think it kicked off really good last night, because that's the first thing Chris Wilder said in his interview. The magic is very much alive in the FA Cup on Teesside. So hopefully we can see another couple of stories. Whether Plymouth would beat the likes of Chelsea, I can't see that. But maybe Kidderminster getting through, or Boreham Water playing Bournemouth tomorrow night as well. It'd be lovely to see a story like that. But it'll always have the magic for me, Reggie.
Always, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny, Miguel Delaney writes a very good article in the Irish Independent, and the headline of it is, players became legends at their clubs, like Liam Brady at Arsenal for Wembley heroics, but that has been lost in the era of the top four. But it's true, like I remember there's a picture there of that 1979 FA Cup final team with Brady in it and the cup, and, you know, Jennings in goal. And it's like, it just brings you right back. It's so nostalgic just looking at that picture even. But it meant everything, the FA Cup.
It absolutely did, Reggie. And as I say, we grew up as kids watching that, and you think back of the final on FA Cup final day, and the build-up would start.
Morning, yeah.
Grandstand and all the stuff, and it go right through, and you'd see the teams arriving into Wembley and the crowd building outside. It was just magical. And I hope to God, I know, like, there's been a lot of changes. Sport evolves, the game evolves, all that kind of thing. Money is a major problem, obviously, when you look at some of the other competitions. But I hope there's always a place still for the FA Cup, because, as I say, it brings back so many childhood memories for me and such brilliant stories over the years. I even go back when I was a Man United fan, Mark Hughes scored that goal at Wembley against Oldham and all, and magical stuff, the Crystal Palace final, the 3-3, and then going to a replay. So there's been amazing memories over the years.
Very quickly, before I let you go, I just see that Damien Duff is going to be strengthening the Shelburne squad with the signing of the on-loan Arsenal's Jordan McAniff, the Derry midfielder, younger brother of Aaron McAniff. That won't be a bad signing for him.
Yeah, huge signing, Reggie. By all accounts, he's even better than Aaron, from what I hear. I've heard great reports of this young lad. And Aaron was a brilliant player himself, and obviously did so well at Shamrock Rovers, Derry before that, and then Shamrock Rovers, and he's gone to Scotland now. So if they were to add young McAniff to the squad, I think that would really be a huge boost to Shelburne. And of course, it's all kicking off next week, the President's Cup, Reggie, and the week after we've the first league game. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's good. It's good to see Damien Duff making an impression already in the whole setup and how things go. And as you said, it's kicking off very shortly, so we're really looking forward to that. Are you busy? Podcast is back?
Well, that'll be back as well, Reggie, yeah. So the President's Cup is next Friday night, and the podcast will kick off the following Tuesday, and away we go again for another season. So I can't wait, to be honest.
Excellent stuff. Yourself and Stewie. Anyone else on the guest list?
Today? Oh, we're not sure yet. We're not announcing any guests for the time being. But we will. It'll be the usual all throughout the season. We'll have different guests on and all the usual football stories and whatever's topical. And we will have a live show again, Reggie. So you'll be at that as well.
Looking forward to it. I enjoyed the last one. It was a cracking night.
GAA with Declan Drake.
Welcome to our weekly look at the Dublin GAA scene here on Dublin's Talking Sport. We start with Gaelic football and Dublin, who crashed to Armagh on the opening night of the Alliance National Football League Division 1 at Croke Park. 2:15 to 1:13 was the score at the end of the 70 minutes. The Blues' goal scored by Templeogue Sing Street man Lorcan O'Dell, following up on the one that he scored against Louth in the O'Byrne Cup. Overall, a frustrating and disappointing night for the Blues, who are on the road this evening to Tralee. Austin Stacks Park is the venue for the meeting with old rivals Kerry, which throws in at 7 o'clock. Well, after last week's Croke Park defeat, Dublin boss Desi Farrell spoke to the media and wasn't hiding his disappointment at the result.
It's not the start you would have wanted, for sure. I think we knew it was going to be really tough. I think it was actually talking to yourself about the challenge that lied ahead last weekend. We knew that, you know, Armagh would have had this game in their sights from a long way off.
Better news in the club front for Kilmacud Crokes, who qualified for next week's AIB All-Ireland Club Football Final with a 111-8 victory over Pádraig Pearse's at Kingspan Breffni Park last Saturday evening. Now, tickets for next week's final are on sale at the moment, and the appeal from the Kilmacud Crokes Club is for sections 329, 330 and 331 in Croke Park to be packed out in purple and gold next Saturday. Yeah, let's hope that's certainly the case. We'll have an extensive preview of that game in the programme next Saturday morning. To ladies football, and it's an absolutely massive weekend for two sides, one either side of the river, as they contest currentaccount.ie All-Ireland Club Finals. St Jude's, the junior champions of Dublin and Leinster, taking on Mullinahone of Tipperary and Baltinglass this afternoon at 1:30. While tomorrow afternoon, our intermediate queens, St Sylvester's, must cross the Shannon to take on Castlebar Mitchells, that one in Duggan Park in Ballinasloe, also from 1:30. Delighted now to welcome back to the programme Aisling Cleary, who is the PRO of the Leinster Ladies Gaelic Football Association. More accurately, I suppose, Aisling, I should say, the re-elected PRO, because that was a development since we spoke last on the programme.
Yes, Declan, it's always great to be joined or to be on the programme with yourself. I'm back as Leinster PRO for another season.
I'll tell you one thing, if you have half the amount of success in 2022 that you had last year, you'll be a very happy PRO at the end of the year. Not least with the Brendan Martin Cup, but more about that as time goes on. So currently residing, of course, in Meath, as we know, resting in Meath, should I say. Right, to the serious business of this weekend, and as I say, two great club finals to look forward to as Dublin Ladies look to bring All-Ireland titles back to the capital. Let's start with St Jude's, the junior champions of Dublin and Leinster, who will take on Mullinahone of Tipperary for the right to be crowned All-Ireland champions. It's been a massive journey all the way through Aisling for Jude's, the county, the provincial championship, the All-Ireland series, to be here now, an hour away from an All-Ireland final. The level of excitement building up down there must be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I saw during the week there was posts on Instagram and Facebook with all the signs in the primary schools and all the colour and the shouting for teachers and all of that are playing on at the weekend, which is just absolutely great to see. And the more of this, I suppose, that we see, the better.
Yeah, it's indeed been replicated as well, I'm sure, out around Malahide as well. More about that a little bit anon. But Jude's, having captured the Leinster title, Aisling then went into the All-Ireland Series, two games, beat the British champions Tiernanogue and most recently Carrickmacross of Monaghan, scoring 12 goals in the process. Now, mind you, 9 of them were against the British team out in St Margaret's. But speaking of goals, it was their ability to get them against Carrickmacross at a crucial stage of the game that saw them over the line.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a really entertaining fixture in St Margaret's there 2 weeks ago. Aisling Gannon and Niamh Kerr, they popped up with the goals at just the right time. I thought we were heading for extra time at one stage. I looked across at you and you were thinking the same. But it's absolutely great and it just shows their determination to finish. They never gave up hope. It was a really tight game end to end. And it was really, really great to see that they got it. The keeper for Carrickmacross was absolutely incredible. I don't think I've seen goalkeeping like it in a long, long time. A very, very experienced goalkeeper at that. And to see St Jude's finish it off in style in 60 seconds. That's on the Leinster report, the Leinster website, it has gone in 60 seconds. They're 60 minutes now away from an All-Ireland final. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Like I said, they scored 12 goals between the quarterfinal and the semi-final and could have had a hatful more too, only for the goalkeeper. They're a fast team. They're an energetic team. They like to transfer quickly from back to forward. But this Mullinahone team, you know, they'll be a very tough prospect in this All-Ireland final, as any team from Tipperary would be.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think I saw the game for Mullinahone in the semi-final. But, you know, any team that gets to an All-Ireland club final, you know, they've proved their mettle. So it's going to be a very entertaining contest. And I suppose we're hoping that St Jude's will have enough in the tank, will have learned from the game against Carrickmacross when they really were pushed right to the wall, that they'll come up trumps on this afternoon.
Yeah. So the best of luck indeed there to everybody connected with St Jude's. A great club out there in Templeogue, promoting Gaelic games in all codes, it must be said. Great camogie teams as well. So Balton Glass 1:30 this afternoon. Aisling is on our way there at the moment, just called in to see us this morning. So we are very appreciative to her for that. Now to the intermediate final, which is tomorrow afternoon. Duggan Park in Ballinasloe. St Sylvester's travelling west to take on Castlebar Mitchells. Two well-known names in Gaelic games, both sides of the Shannon, Aisling. And you've been very impressed with our county and provincial champion Sylvester's on their run to this final.
Absolutely. I mean, there's stars littered all across St Sylvester's team and not necessarily the ones you might expect. I watched back the St Sylvester's semi-final and I was particularly impressed with their defence. They did not give Canali in the semi-final any room whatsoever. They frustrated Joanne Doonan, their full forward, and that gave their forwards then plenty of ammunition then to go and fire on. They were well in control of the game at half time, and Sinead O'Hearn just put in a masterclass. There was a shot of her in the 59th minute helping out in the cornerback position. So that just goes to show the calibre of the player that St Sylvester's have at their disposal. And I'll put my Leinster colours well on here. It's going to be very, very difficult to see anything other than a St Sylvester's victory here, I think.
Yeah, of course, they have it in common with St Jude's that neither of them have been this far before in the in their respective competitions, so the remarkable freshness of it. But the experience of the likes of Sinéad Hearn, who you've mentioned as a multiple All-Ireland winning captain with Dublin, and Niamh McAvoy and Nicole Owens and one or two others, that type of experience will be invaluable on Sunday afternoon.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you could add Kate Sullivan to that mix as well, who's one of the fastest sprinters I think I've seen in a while. They move the ball really well. They know when to increase the pace of the game. They know when to slow it down. They've got massive experience, and they're really, I suppose, given the people of Malahide something to cheer for. And I mean, at the minute, late January, early February, you need something to cheer us up.
Yeah, indeed, it was out that way during the week, and like St Jude's, the area is bedecked in the green and the blue, and everyone is talking about the game, which is absolutely fantastic in Sylvester. Safe travels to everyone from Temple Oak and Malahide, and indeed to Aisling as well, going to both venues over the course of the weekend to keep us all up to date with the action from there. Pleasure as always, Aisling, and safe travels to you today.
Cheers. Thanks, Declan.
Matty Kenny, manager of Dublin, joins us here at Croke Park after watching his team claim the Walsh Cup for 2022 with a fourth straight win since the start of the year. Congratulations, first of all, Matty. Mission accomplished in winning the Walsh Cup. Another comprehensive performance from your team there tonight. You must be very pleased making your way home.
Yeah, look, the lads did well, and you know, getting the Walsh Cup final in Croke Park here tonight, like that was a bonus for us. Any time you come to Croke Park and to get a run out and get a chance to play here is always something to look forward to. And the lads were looking forward to playing here tonight. And look, it's a pre-season tournament. It's preparation for the league. League is kicking off now next Sunday. We have Waterford coming to town, so that'll be a massive, massive test for us. But as I said, you know, it's a chance tonight, the last four games, to look at our squad, look at some of the younger players, and give everybody a run out. Start the two young lads up top tonight, Aidan Mellis and Colin Curry, both quizzes themselves really, really well. And, you know, they set the tone from early doors, and that was good. And look, it's another game under the belt in preparation for the league.
It's been a great day for Kilmacud Crokes. Their footballers qualified for the All-Ireland Club final earlier on, and two of their hurlers from the county champions were the men with the goals in the first half for you. Fergal and Ronan Hayes came on as a sub.
Yeah, so Fergal had you know, been playing very well the last few weeks, and he brought that form again there tonight. And Ronan, like, you know, a number of our lads are involved in Fitzgibbon as well, so we're trying to, you know, make sure that they're not overloaded and not getting too much hurling. But Colin picked up a little knock just before half time there, and brought in Ronan, and Ronan made an immediate impact, and fairness, got that goal before half time, and that gave us a really good cushion going in at half time, I felt.
We know, of course, that we had lost Eamon Dillon before the championship started, even last year, and he's come back well, worked his way well back in, and clipped over a couple of fine scores tonight as well.
Yeah, so Trallier, like, you know, he's back in trainers now. You know, out for 7 or 8 months there with that injury he picked up last spring. You know, he's coming back towards fitness. You know, every minute he gets on the pitch, he'll be getting sharper and sharper. He's someone we're looking towards. Later, as the league goes on into the championship, and try to keep all the lads injury free and keep our squad. The depth of the squad as good as possible. You know, we've picked up a number of injuries like you do. You know, Keno Sullivan, the last day in Offaly, picked up a serious enough hamstring, and looked like some Mark Shure and Rushi, and Keane Boland. We're trying to get all these guys back on the pitch. Shane Barrett, so want to get them back on the pitch during the league, towards the end of the league, and for the championship, and get that depth in our squad that we're trying to build over the last couple of years.
So many, but that's the Walsh Cup. 4 wins from 4, yes, but the serious business of the Allianz National Hurling League starts tomorrow afternoon when Waterford come calling to Parnell Park. The game throws in at 3:45. Delighted once again to welcome back our hurling analyst Sean Lane, who's rubbing his hands with glee with the prospect of the Allianz National League. Yes, the serious business of 2022 is but a day or so away. And I am right, Sean, am I? You are rubbing your hands in glee, looking forward to the festivities, even hurling, if you like, over in the league campaign over the next few weeks.
Oh, absolutely, Declan. So once Christmas is over, you start thinking about the hurling, and we've had 4 great outings with the Dublin hurlers so far. So, yeah, really looking forward to the match on Sunday.
Last Saturday, continuation of the form shown in the previous three games, and has landed the Walsh Cup. Scoring 229 in Croke Park in January is impressive, and everyone's got to be very, very pleased with the success that was enjoyed there.
Absolutely, like you said, 229, and it's been consistent, and it was a 329 against Galway, so they're putting up massive scores, and they didn't concede a goal as well at the other end, so it's going to be very hard to beat them. You know, tomorrow will be a big step up playing Waterford in a National League game in Parnell Park, but I can't wait to get across to Neller to have a good look at that, Declan.
Now, if you're Matty Kenny, I mean, you learned a lot about a lot of different people, and you've even learned a lot about people in different positions that we might normally have expected them to be. We spoke about that on the programme last week. So he sits down this week and has been sitting down this week to look at the Waterford game and putting a starting 15 together. He's got many, many options.
He has, and if you just take the after the Walsh Cup game, my understanding is the Wexford management cut his panel. I think Matty Kenny is in a unique position to say, I want to hold on to all of these. I think they've all contributed over the four games. You know, Rhian McBride as a centre forward, I didn't ever come up with that one, but he's played well. Chris Crummie as a midfielder, we didn't ever come up with that. We'd have had him either half back or half forward. That seems to be working. The form of Fergal Whiteley up front, I mean, Matt, he has tremendous options now going into it. He has probably a panel of 24 or 5. But, you know, to what I've seen, it's 27 or 28 of these can play at that level. And that's a really, really good team, Declan.
But as you said yourself there, Sean, a serious step up now at Waterford coming to the Nell tomorrow afternoon for the opening game. Yes, a Waterford team that will be weakened because they don't have the Ballygunner connection. They have some of the best hurlers in the country, which we can look forward to seeing in the club final next weekend. But still, it's going to be a formidable challenge for the crew tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Firstly, mentioned our manager, Liam Cahill. Tipperary man, did a lot of work with underage Tipperary, had a chance to go back to Tipperary, but he didn't. He stayed with them. You could conceivably argue, Declan, that Waterford over the last 2 years have been the second best team in the country. We all know that Limerick are miles ahead. But, you know, Waterford were beaten the first year in the final, and they were beaten the semi-final both days by Limerick. They are going to be missing Desi Hutchin and Pádraig O'Mahony. They're huge losses. But, like, they've had one run out so far in the Munster Cup against Clare. They were beaten on the day, but they put up 122. You know, but like they're going to be hard to beat. They're going to be stepping up, and they still have some really, really good players. You know, Patrick Curran, Stephen Bennett, and Austin Gleeson. The last day against Clare, he notched up 1-5 from play. So if he's back to a bit of form, they'll still be hard beaten. Well, yeah, I'd urge all kids and mentors and all the clubs in Dublin to try and get across to Parnell Park. Having been there myself on touchlines in 07 and in a 21 final, having a big crowd behind you, and it is a tight pitch, it's marvellous to hear the crowd behind you. It's great to see young lads on the pitch at half time. I think Parnell Park, if we can get 4,000 or 5,000 there on tomorrow, I really think it'll make a huge difference with it. And whether I'm being bold here or not, Declan, you'll always be pushing me for predictions. I actually think Dublin will win this one on Sunday, which is ultimate aim here.
And there's no doubt with challenges to come against Kilkenny, who of course will have Ballyhale Shamrocks players back, Tipperary and other teams, it's going to be a fascinating few weeks. But the seeds of it have been sown well with this Walsh Cup success. So now finally, Sean, it's just about keeping everyone's feet on the ground and practical about it.
Yeah, and that's it. It is. Most times people say it's only January, we're into early February, but the league hasn't started. It starts on Sunday, but it would be a great way, Declan, it would be a great way to put down a marker to say, hold on, that form we've had in the last four games, there's no fluke to that. We're here today, we're serious. It's Matty's fourth year. We've said, both you and me, all the time that they've improved year on year and year. And, you know, we got to a quarter final last year in the championship. If we improve by 4 or 5 points this year, who's to know we can't go to a semi-final and maybe make that big day in July in Croke Park?
Yeah, certainly would be nothing better than for the hurlers to run out at Parnell Park tomorrow afternoon to 4,000 or maybe 5,000 people plus in the ground, willing them on to victory. As I say, 3:45 is the throw-in time there tomorrow afternoon. My thanks to Sean Lane. We look forward to getting Sean's thoughts next week on that Waterford game and looking ahead indeed to the rest of the Allianz National Hurling League.
It's time to talk golf now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Deirdre Smith. Good morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very well. Ken was trying to do a mashup of Seamus and Leone. He was calling their Seamus Maguire was the new golf combo, but it would be an interesting golf that would produce. But things are going wonderful for Irish golfers at the moment. Leone is sitting up there, 13 under, in Florida in the LPGA Drive On Championship, and tied for the lead with Marina Alex. So she's gone back to where she left off the middle of last season, probably towards the end.
Yeah. Look, it's marvelous. Maybe Seamus and Leona should play in the Scandinavian mixed this year. So, to, you know, after Ken making that bit of a suggestion about Seamus Maguire, but yeah, marvelous. Look, we're not surprised. You know, we've covered these two all of last year, and it's just fantastic to see her up at the top of the leaderboard. And I think she'll go on and win. And the great thing about this weekend is, she is only one round. It's only a 3-round tournament.
Oh, right. Okay. You answered my question. I was going to say, why are you so confident about the prediction that she'll go on and win? But one more to get through, and then that's it. So 18 holes of brilliant golf.
Yeah, I don't think she'll lose it. That's my prediction. I think somebody comes from the field and shoot an unbelievable score, which can happen. And you know, Leona's gone toe to toe with. That girl, number one in the world. Oh God, her name eludes me just for a moment. Nelly Korda. Yeah. When she went toe to toe with Nelly Korda and pushed her to the limit last year in the tournament and was just pipped, and then in another tournament, Lydia Ko came out of the pack and beat the whole field by 6 shots. So I know she's hungry and I know she wants this. And you know, we said it last year, all of last year. It's not a matter of if, it's when. And she's really matching her confidence now with her skill level. She feels totally at home. Her distance control yesterday with her irons was just superb. She put it really well. You know, she played with Anna Norquist yesterday and Lexi Thompson, two of the giants of the game, won majors, and she didn't look one bit out of place. She outplayed them. She outplayed Lexi Thompson. And look, she has just, like Seamus Power, she has just steadily and gradually built her confidence. And that's really solid. It's really solid. It's not based on, you know, a one-hit wonder. It's not a flash in the pan. You know, she's the real deal, and that's it. And I really feel, you know, this is her chance today now. I mean, she'll have lots of other chances, but it would be just remarkable to win this early in the year, and that massive confidence for her for the season.
Absolutely. Well, let's hope she can follow through and get that result. You mentioned Seamus Power there as well. Now, I mean, it's probably a little bit less of a surprise to see him sitting up at the leaderboard with the performances he's been putting in the last number of weeks. He's been absolutely on fire. But like that, can he push on and take the title?
Well, look, the great thing about him is he's with John Murphy today. He's paired with John Murphy, and that's been a marvellous pairing for the two of them, because John Murphy has kind of hung on to the coattails of him. He's making his debut on the PGA Tour. And again, he's a gutsy player. I've high hopes for him in the future. I think he's going to be marvellous. But, I mean, it's all about Seamus Power this weekend. 264s. He shot 64 in Spyglass Hills. 8 shots better than the average in the field. I mean, it was just a remarkable performance. It's the hardest of the three courses. And the great thing today is he's going to be playing with John Murphy again because of the format of the tournament. And he's going to be along with Dermot Desmond and Jerry McManus. So it's like a Sunday four-ball for them, you know. So he's going to be really relaxed. It showed there yesterday. Again, his distance control. I mean, he played the 18th yesterday in Pebble Beach. He hit 2 irons. And he hit a wedge from 96 yards to 4 feet, and he hole the putt. His wedges were just unbelievable, remarkable. I mean, if Rory McIlroy was doing this, we'd be salivating.
Yeah.
Look, it's a question of Sunday when he's not in that four ball again. But I think he'd play well again today. I think he'd consolidate his lead. I mean, he's 5 shots ahead, and we all know about 5 shots ahead. I mean, Rory was six, or Hovland was 6 shots behind last week, and look what he did. So it's never in the bag. It's never over. Golf is a funny game. This time last year, just to put it in context, Seamus Power was outside the top 400.
Wow.
And if he wins on Sunday, it'll put him in second in the FedEx Cup.
Okay.
I mean, just it's just astounding what he's doing. A long way to go. Well, there's a long way to go. But look, and there's a lot of players behind him. The player I'd be worried about is Cantlay, because he's playing Pebble Beach today, which is the easiest of the three courses. And, you know, he could shoot a 64 on there. But Monterey as well, Monterey Peninsula, the other course is yielding a lot of birdies. So I think Power will go on. And it showed yesterday. He just has to keep attacking, just like Leona has to do. They can't just sit back and let somebody take it. They've got to win it. Yeah. And look, here's hoping that it'll be Super Saturday and Super Sunday. It'll be our answer to Britain's Super Saturday and the Olympics a few years ago, hopefully, with Ireland winning against Wales and Leona winning. And tomorrow then Seamus gone on to win. I mean, what a weekend for Irish sport.
It would be incredible, absolutely. I'm nearly out of time, but just a very quick word. I heard during the week that Rory McIlroy is saying he might be struggling to get to the Irish Open this year. That'd be a big blow for the organisers if he doesn't make it.
Yeah, look, there's just so many tournaments. You know, he's living in the States. It'll be a massive blow, sure. You know, any time a top your top home player is not available, it will be a big blow. Mm. You know, so but look, you have to respect what Rory's trying to do too, and perhaps he's maybe done those things in the past to the detriment of his own career, and
yeah.
You have to respect his approach and attitude to what he does too. So, but no doubt a huge blow, without doubt.
NFL now, time to talk to Stephen O'Brien of the UK Packers.co.uk. Morning, Stephen, how are you?
Good, Reggie, good. The moment has arrived, Reg. One we've been sort of flirting with for the last 20 years.
For the last years. 10 years, probably, yeah.
Yeah, at least.
Tom Brady, he's finally hung up the, what do they call them, cleats, is it they call them over there?
Cleats. Yeah, cleats, not boots. Oh, man, 22 seasons in the NFL, 7 Super Bowls appearing in 10. I mean, if you break down the amount of Super Bowls that there were, he's starred in like 20% of all Super Bowls. It's just, his career just blows the mind. Especially, you know, Reg, you know better than anybody. I mean, in a contact sport, to play it till the age of 44 is one thing. When you have, you know, 20-year-olds coming out of the college system, you know, eager to rip his head off, because it's all, you know, they always like to put these guys' heads on a stake. It's always kind of like, who do you want? What do you want to do to a young defensive player? I was like, I want to sack Aaron Rodgers, or I want to sack Tom Brady. And we saw that happen after he retired. Like, you know, defensive players putting up pictures of them putting him to ground and going, oh, you know, right off into the sunset, chief. But, you know, there was typical fashion as well. Brady controversy. You know, Adam Schefter of ESPN announced it last week, and we sort of mentioned it briefly that we weren't sure whether he was going to retire or not. But this is going to show you, I don't understand the Brady hate. I really don't. The guy's had basically two NFL Hall of Fame careers in 22 years. You could split his career in two and he could get into the Hall of Fame twice. But it sort of stinks to me, Reg, of like, you know, the Liverpool fatigue in the 80s or the Man United fatigue in the 90s and 2000s, where if someone's great for that long, people start to get kind of fed up
and they want them to ride off. Is there much of it, or is it just that, you know, is it like a small percentage, but they shout the loudest, or is there a lot of Brady hatred? I'm a bit surprised to hear that there's that much of it.
Yeah, there actually is, like, and I mean, that's what sort of, and I know what you mean. I mean, you know, prohibition for alcohol in the States, for instance, when that happened, that was a small minority, and there's a whole philosophy and sort of psychology behind the small crowd shouting loudest. But there was this Brady hate and this kind of thing. Like, anytime you'd bring up his wins or his accomplishments, someone would always point to one of those wins and say, oh, he won that because of Deflategate. Oh, he won that Super Bowl because of Spygate. Oh, he won that Super Bowl because of the Tuck Rule. Oh, he's assistant quarterback. The best thing that happened to Tom Brady's career was that he got out from underneath the shadow of Bill Belichick. Because Bill Belichick is this guy who, you know, when he had Brady, Brady was sort of said, oh, he's a system quarterback. He's winning because Belichick is so good. Because Brady, the thing about him is that he wasn't very sexy. It wasn't very exciting. He didn't make, you know, he made some fantastic throws, but there was an awful lot of little dink and dunk short stuff. He could get it done when it mattered, and he could stand up in the pocket. He wasn't a mobile quarterback, so we see Lamar Jackson and, you know, Patrick Mahomes and all these players coming out, and they're running about the place, whereas Brady never did that. He always just sat back in the pocket, and nothing fazed him, which made him kind of boring to people, so they wanted to move on to something better, like Patrick Mahomes. So there was that hate out there, and it's only when he left New England, Reg, and went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and in the first year went to the Super Bowl and won it, that people thought, oh, you know, maybe. And it's the weirdest thing, because the guy's won 7 Super Bowls. Mm. So you think, oh, there's no way it's in question. Like, no one questions Messi or no one questions all of that. They question the coaches in that regard. Pep Guardiola comes up for like, ah, well, look at the teams he's had. Whereas it's the opposite for Tom Brady throughout his career. Bill Belichick was seen as this engineer, this architect of everything. Mm-hmm. And it's only when he left that they realized, oh, maybe there's more to it. But look, I mean, he even finished his career on a high. 5,316 passing yards, 43 passing touchdowns. You know, he was leading the league in his final year and just decided to sort of ride off into the sunset. It would have been great had he got another Super Bowl. But this is a rags-to-riches story, which is why people love it. And also, he's the exception, Reg, that proves the rule. No one will ever do what Tom Brady has done. He's destroyed what it is to be an NFL fan, because everyone expects when you have an Aaron Rodgers, a Patrick Mahomes, you know, when you have Sean McVay leading the Rams, oh, you're going to win the Super Bowl every year for 10 years. You cannot build a dynasty like they did in New England and then kind of in Tampa Bay to come back in the NFL. So he's kind of ruined it for everybody. But just, yeah, one of the best to ever do it, and he'll never be surpassed.
Okay, well done, him. Moving on quickly then to the Super Bowl itself. The Rams against the Bengals. A very unlikely pairing for a Super Bowl final when we started off the season. Your thoughts on that?
Shocking. Well, it was great. Look, for the neutrals, it's fantastic because, you know, the Packers, everyone hated them. Aaron Rodgers had his controversy. So when they got beaten, people were like, oh, great. You know, I don't want to see them get in. But the Rams, you know, they got rid of Goff. They got in Matt Stafford. He had a penance. He spent it in Siberia, which was the Lions, for 12 years. He was always seen as this fantastic quarterback. We knew him in Green Bay as just phenomenal because when we went up against him, he was just ridiculous. But then he moved to the Rams and, you know, there he goes to the Super Bowl straight away. So people were like, oh, it's justified, and he seems like a really nice guy, and you know, he deserves it after all this time. And then the Rams, on the opposite side, the Bengals, then, you know, they beat the Chiefs. They come back last week from an 18-point deficit. It's the, you know, it ties the AFC Championship game, comebacks for a team since 2006, I think, the Colts and the Pats. So, you know, and then you look at Joe Burrow and like the stuff he's doing in his second season. He's young. He has like these sunglasses in his press conferences and he seems all about it. So it's great. It's great for the sport. It's the first time ever that two fourth seed teams have got into the Super Bowl, and these two teams have never matched up against each other. The Rams, you know, this is what, their second Super Bowl in 4 years, whereas the Bengals haven't been here since 1988 season, which they lost. So they've only been in the Super Bowl twice, faced the Niners twice, got beaten twice. So it's fantastic that they found their way into it again. So look, this is a game for the neutrals. People are kind of happy that, oh, Brady didn't get in, or oh, we don't see Mahomes in there again, or Rodgers and the Packers didn't get in. So they're just delighted that they have these two fourth seed teams. So it will be entertaining, and it's always going to be close. Like, I think the other sort of matchups between the Bengals, they've lost by one score in the Super Bowl. So they'll go all out for this. It's going to be great.
Quickly, just give me a prediction.
I want the Bengals. The Rams are 4-point favourites, but I want the Bengals. But we will break it down on next week's show, because we've got the Pro Bowl, and I, you know, with the Pro Bowl, I'll turn the TV off, go outside. But the Super Bowl, stay tuned for the 13th of Feb.
Time to turn our attention to horse racing now, of course, and I'm joined on the line by the wonderful George McDonagh. Good morning, George, how are you?
Very well, Reggie, very well, good to talk to you again.
Absolutely, great to chat to you. Yeah, what a brilliant weekend. I have to say, for the organisers of this Dublin Racing Festival, a very clever move, I think, putting it on this weekend to coincide with the Welsh being in town. Some wonderful racing going on, and for sports fans, being able to mix the two in over the course of the weekend, it'll be a cracking bit of stuff.
Yes, Reggie, you know, it's fantastic. It's the way it's married in with the rugby. For many, many years, this fixture was a standalone one-day fixture that normally took place on the Sunday. We had the rugby on the Saturday, or we had vice versa, the very first day in Croke Park when France visited to play Ireland. That game was on a Sunday, and we went racing on the Saturday and lost our money on the Saturday, and then enjoyed Ireland getting done by the French, unfortunately, on the Sunday. Okay. It's wonderful for us Manchester United supporters, myself and Mr. Doherty. We need a pickup after last night. Will we get it today? I hope. Well, does that as well, Reg, but we hope we'll get it today, because like you, I think Ireland will beat Wales. But one of my selections as well might be quite topical for the day that's in it. But it's wonderful racing over the 2 days. It's hats off to Horse Racing Ireland, the Leopardstown executive, Tim Husbands, and all his crew that were there that sorted this out. The amount of people that have put work into this. Sad thing is, we've only got two UK challengers over the 2 days, Paul Nicholson's Over Green and Teen, and Frodon. We'd like to see a lot more, but such is the superiority, in my view, of Irish National Hunt racing at the moment. I don't really blame them for staying at home, but it is wonderful racing. There's something for everybody. There's also going to be crowds there, Reg. Yeah. Unfortunately, last year we didn't. 2 years ago, we did have just before the lockdown. And the most important thing in horse racing will be, I think, in huge presence today and tomorrow. Mm. That's the old race course rumour. Race course rumour is one of the great things that us punters love. Some person thinks they know something, whether a favourite hasn't eaten up well, whether there's a chance that this horse could be heavily backed up against a favourite. And that race course rumour goes rife around the ring. And people are betting in the ring as well. Bookmakers are giving, they're actually giving great terms, bookmakers, on track. So us punters will certainly have, I think, a chance to make a few quid over the next 2 days.
Yeah, there's no doubt everybody's fallen victim to that racecourse rumour on many an occasion and live to regret it sometimes. You know, you might have...
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah, might have something picked out and you're going, yeah, and you go against your gut instinct and go with the rumour and the yoke you picked out in the beginning goes and wins it. But sometimes it goes the right way. So that's all adds to, the, as you said, the atmosphere of it. There's a good combination back this weekend as well. We see Honeysuckle and Rachel Blackmore joining forces once again.
Yes, Reg, that's tomorrow. That will be the highlight tomorrow. The people will be 10 deep before the race around the parade ring to see this brilliant mare. They'll be 20 deep when, as I believe, and a lot more like me believe, she just saunters around and stamps her authority on the 2 mile hurling division tomorrow afternoon. I'm disappointed that Appreciators hasn't taken up the engagement. Willie Mullins is a very impressive novice hurler from last season. I'm thinking that Willie is probably a very, very shrewd man, as we all know, is probably going to say, we're going to have one crack at this lady and let that be at Cheltenham and not here. Don't leave our hopes of a champion hurdle win Appreciated in Leopardstown tomorrow afternoon. It would have been a wonderful clash. The £7 mayor's allowance, I think, would always swing it in Honeysuckle's favour. People will tell us she needs to win by more than three lengths every time to show that that £7 doesn't make a difference. I personally don't think it does. Herself and Rachel are a match made in heaven. She's the go-to girl over in both fences and hurdles and racing. Everybody loves Rachel Blackmore. Mm. Us farm purists think, I've thought for years, she's superb. But it's the story. And more importantly, Reg, when you go racing, it's the feel-good factor. Yeah. This lady has never refused a photograph or an autograph with anybody. Mm. And that's brilliant.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Okay. We've two wonderful days of racing to look at. Give us your choices and your picks and the ones that we should really watch out for, as well as your lucky 15.
To the one horse I'm looking forward to tomorrow is tomorrow, Reg. And that is in the Novices Hurdle, the Tattersall Ireland Novices Hurdle at 3:35. That's Sir Gerhard. Ultra impressive to everyone's eye at Leopardstown over Christmas. Brilliant winner of the champion bumper last year when beating Kilcrush. This is a very, very good horse. Currently available about 5-1, 11-2, where most bookmakers are non-runner, no bet for the Supreme Novices Hurdle at the Cheltenham Festival. If somebody from the Willie Mullins camp told me this horse was definitely going to go the 2 miler rather than the 2.5, I'd be having a right good go each way. I'm going to have a go each way anyways at 5-1, 11-2. Before racing tomorrow, because I think this horse will win. I think he will shorten in the betting against Constitution Hill, and I couldn't have that John Bond for love nor money. Mm. And I think a good performance from Sir Gerhard will set him up for Cheltenham. I think this horse will win the Supreme Novices Hurdle, the opening day of the Cheltenham Festival, the opening race.
Excellent stuff. Okay.
Two more tomorrow each way for punters who like a crack at the big handicaps. 10-10's form figures don't read too good well in the 2 mile 6 handicap chase at 2:25. Was pulled up in atrocious ground at the Limerick over Christmas. That was his first run since a very good second to Bram a Bull, who has franked that form by running very well in the Kerry National and in the Hennessy Gold Cup, what we used to call the Hennessy, at Newbury. And I think 10-10 at the prices under Mark Walsh, 16-20-1, is worthy each way support. And C. Ducker is a horse I've always believed is a decent handicap in. Arthur Moore used to farm this Liffey handicap hurdle when it was the old Sweeps hurdle and Ladbroke hurdle or whatever they call it over the years. This horse was ninth to Bridie's Hill at the Christmas meeting, but it was a very, very good run. And Chris Jones is also the owner, is a director at Leopardstown, loves nothing more than a winner at Leopardstown. A very nice man. And I think Arthur Moore might have this Sea Ducker wound up, already been back from 20s to 14s. I think he's got a huge chance in that handicap hurdle tomorrow.
Excellent stuff. Okay, and let's have your lucky 15.
Lucky 15, we're going all out today, Reg. We're going for a good value. There's each way available at every race we go to. So the 2:45 at Leopardstown, we're going for good time, Johnny. Tie that in with Johnny Sexton, let's hope, today. Good time, Johnny. Impressive winner over a half mile shorter at the Christmas meeting. Showed a withering turn of foot, up 9 pounds, but Tony Martin's team were in top form. And I think good time, Johnny, at the prices each way, is definitely got a chance around about 6-7 to 1. In the Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup at 3:15, Manila Indoor is the reigning champion chaser. The winner of the Gold Cup last season beat a Plutar. Did disappoint at Kempton in cheek pieces. I don't think he likes going right-handed. If Frodon wins this, there's no point in any of the Irish contenders that in this race today going for the Cheltenham Gold Cup. Asterion Falange being well-backed. Number 8, Manila Indoor, for me, to re-establish his authority on the chasing ranks. Third selection goes in the Paddy Power Handicap Chase at 3:50. I'm going with the top weight Exit Poll. Second to Grange Walk, another rival today over the Christmas. This horse, I think, is a really, really decent chaser. Was a good bumper horse and won a couple of hurdle races as well. Jack Foley's 5 pound claim will be vital here. Jesse Harrison's team just back in form, and I think he'll defy top weight. And the nap of the four edge goes in the 2:55 at Sandown. We tipped up Green Book at Kempton a couple of weeks ago, got no further than the second hurdle when brought down by the fall of Chitty Bello. Has some two wins in the past, won a Naked Spoon race at Ludlow, but prior to that was a good winner from Chitty Balco at Haydock. It's interesting that Venetia Williams, a very shrewd trainer, keeps him for another big handicap, has stamina from the flat. 3 miles, I don't think, will be a problem. Charlie Deutsch aboard, number 14, Green Book. That's the nap of the four edge in the 2:55 at Sandown Park.
Wonderful, George, as always. Thank you for that. We look forward to it. You enjoy the racing over the weekend. Enjoy the rugby too, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Well, everything has to get better after last night, Reggie.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Forget United. They're not worth the heartache. They're just not worth it. All right, George.
Thanks, Edge.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.